Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 89 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Travis Bowe of Real Comic Heroes. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Hello there.
Minute 89 begins with Charlie beginning to raise some concerns and ends with Zeus being shocked by John's information. So we ended things yesterday. We had a few seconds, not that long, in the school, and our good friend Charlie, head of the bomb squad, was able to take off the door to the refrigerator. You know, not only is he a bomb squad guy, but he also knows how to fix your fridge if needed, which is pretty important if you're, you know, if you got some nice explosives left in your refrigerator overnight, you know, that they're starting to get moldy or something like that.
The whole, like, fridge bomb, you know, plot, when you think about it, it's like this whole thing is so elaborate, because they mentioned earlier that, like, this fridge was dropped off, you know, and the whole thing about, like, it's unplugged, but it has a power supply and all that. But it's like the infrastructure that Simon must have to have a crew to deliver this fridge bomb to, you know, it seems like a random school until we know the connection to Zeus and, you know, all that. It's like they're going through so many hoops to do this. You know, when it's all a ruse, the ruse makes sense because it's keeping the police occupied. But it's so elaborate.
Yeah. Again, we've talked numerous times about this, about
whether
it was plausible that Simon had enough time to do this final screw you to Zeus, you know, by saying, oh, I'm going to find out where, you know, what school your nephews are in, and I'm going to put the bomb there. You know, it's again, I think this goes back to what you were talking about. I think it was yesterday when you said catastrophes, where this is something that doesn't make any sense, but it's put in there to raise the suspense and the thrills of the movie itself.
Yeah. And maybe Simon didn't have enough time to do research on Zeus and find out he has nephews. But it's still like he still put the bomb in a school in his community. So it, you know, he might have kids, he might have, you know, relatives or may have no kids or family at the school, but it's still a bomb in his community. So I guess it works on that level. If he didn't have time to find out for a fact that he had nephews here. So.
Right. Again, it's sort of a little far-fetched.
Sure.
By the way that they did it.
Yeah.
Story. Yeah. It's too much of a coincidence, has it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
from that perspective. But okay. Well, what can you do? There are a lot of questions that can be raised, and we've raised them. You know, like how, for instance, did Simon know that he needs to have two tickets to Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
You know, theoretically, he should only have needed one because it was just John. You know, so.
Yeah, the timing of everything. I don't know when he bought tickets for. Yeah, who knows?
That's right. Maybe he said, oh, maybe we'll have someone else. So maybe that'll work. I don't know. Not really sure. That's, you know, there's a lot of things in the story that work and don't work at the same time.
Sure.
You know, from that perspective.
Yeah, and maybe something like that is a holdover from if it was thought to be a Lethal Weapon script. It's like, yeah, but there would have been, you know, two guys at the center of the story. So the two tickets would have, you know, may have been obvious from the start. But when it got transitioned to this movie, maybe it was like no one thought that it would be odd that there'd be two tickets. Yeah, who knows?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can look at it from that perspective. You know, I don't know. So then Charlie started saying yesterday and was cut off when he said, well, I'd say. And here he finishes his little crack by saying, you could call off your search. I guess being a bomb detector, you know, you need to have a little bit of a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, when dealing with these type of situations.
I really like Charlie.
Yeah. I like him too. I like all of these supporting characters. You mm-hmm. know, each of them are very unique in mm-hmm. in their personalities, and you know, they all have great chemistry working together.
Yeah.
You know, it's believable that this is the team.
Yeah. You know,
from that perspective. And at this point, then Cobb says to him, "Can you stop it?" And he goes, "I shouldn't even touch it."
Yeah. Good answer.
Who knows what kind of booby traps this thing's got? And then he goes, "What about the code?" And he says, "No word." And then Lambert, you know, breaks into the conversation and goes, "When do we evacuate?" Cobb then responds and says, Simon says he sees one kid leave the building. Boom. He goes, "Fine. There's a chance that someone's still watching, but we can't stand here with our thumbs up our ass waiting for the freaking thing to blow up." Okay. So, I mean, it's a nice conversation. I like the way that they do that. You know, the thing that jumped out at me here that I wanted to talk about is the phrase booby trap.
Hmm.
Okay. Do you know where the etymology of the phrase, where it comes from? Any idea?
Not really. No.
So it actually comes from the Spanish. There's a word in Spanish called bobo, which means stupid, daft, naive, simple, fool, idiot, clown, funny man, or one who is easily cheated.
Okay.
And sometimes you can also call it a dunce or something like that. So basically the idea is it's an idiot's trap.
Okay.
You know, the first time that it appeared in English language as booby, meaning like a stupid person, because you also have booby prize and things like that, you know, it's in 1590. And so they, you know, there's a species of bird that is known as a booby, which has large flat feet and wide wingspans that are clumsy and slow on shore, which make them easy to catch when they're ashore.
Yeah, I kind of thought that might have been where the phrase came from, was the bird. Right. Like maybe there's a way to trap them by with a simple, you know, dig a hole and they'll just fall right in it or something. You know, I thought it might have been something like that, but that makes sense.
Right. And these birds used to land on shipping vessels where they would be caught, and then you know, the crew would have a nice little meal.
Yeah.
Of the whole thing. So the phrase mostly referred to pranks by kids and stuff like that up until World War I, where the connotation changed to, being more connected to explosives and things like that, you know, setting booby traps. I mean, obviously, you know, anyone who's seen Vietnam movies and, you know, even some World War II movies and stuff like that. Home Alone, there you go. Home Alone is a diehard movie.
Yeah.
You know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so the idea is that, you know, that it has much more of a military use these days than anything else. But you still have practical jokes that are used here, you know, so. Instead of trying to kill, maim, or injure people, there are booby traps that can be used for entertainment. So you have practical joke booby traps that are designed as everyday items, like cigars or packets of chewing gum, nuts, snack items, things like that. You know, I remember that as a kid, one of my brothers had a, you know, like a fake package of gum, where when you pull out when you pull out a piece of gum, it has like a mouse trap type of thing that snaps on your finger, you know, nice. Stuff like that. Yeah. You have exploding cigars, the dribble glass. You have the snake in the can type of thing.
Sure.
You know, where you twist open the can and the snake comes. There's what's known as shocking gum, I guess it's gum that gives you a little bit of a shock when you chew it. And you know, you can sometimes do things just in the house or in the workplace and things like that that are different types of pranks. You know, like loosening the bolts in a chair so right. it collapses when someone sits on it, or you know, the whole idea of putting a bucket of water on a partially open door.
That's yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
You know, and sometimes water, sometimes confetti, you know, things like that. So yeah, there's but the basically the idea here of booby traps is something that, he's talking more about the military aspect of it, that something that can explode and cause a lot more damage than one might think. You know, something you want to stay away from if you can.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, understandably. You know, Charlie knows what he's doing, knows what he's talking about when it comes to that.
I like how, as goofy as we've seen Charlie be, he seems incredibly professional and proficient with dealing with these bombs. You know, he's shown to be kind of a goof, but then, like, they rely on him and they trust him when it comes to, like...
Well, I guess because Connie's not here, because Connie's the one who got upset at him for, you know, for throwing the little paperclip at her.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Charlie! You're going to wear this chair as a hat.
Yeah. I kind of wish, like, you have a character in this movie, like, is his name Rick? Who dies pretty early. He's one of the of the first, you know, casualties of this plan. And then, like, when John finds him and when he asks Lambert later if, like, they found Ricky, it's like there's a lot of weight there in those moments. And then, like, for me, it's like it's a character who I don't care about really because I haven't had any time to get to know him or have any personality really.
Well, he was in the first Die Hard.
What's that?
He was in the first Die Hard also.
Was he?
And as a different character, but the actor
I didn't know that.
Yes, the actor was in The Hunt for October also.
Sure.
And he was in a whole bunch of McTiernan films before. He passed away a year after this movie came out. But in the original Die Hard, he played one of the SWAT guys that was standing next to Powell through most of the movie.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I maybe can picture him.
He's listed as young cop in the original Die Hard.
Right on. I think though, like what I'm getting at is like I kind of wish that Charlie got to have a heroic sacrifice in this in some way, because we get to him disarming this bomb later, or, you know, thinking he is, and you think like, oh man, you know, because at the time we still think it's a real bomb, but I kind of wish that Charlie had a moment where we like he paid the ultimate price in a heroic way. Instead of Ricky or whatever. I don't know. Not that I wish Charlie.
Well, let's put this way. Ricky, my response to that is I don't think Ricky died in a very heroic way from the way that he was killed by Otto, you know, who just decided to shoot him, whatever it was. Yeah. And, you know, we got some gruesome shots of Ricky along the way with that also. Even like one point where he's upside down and you see blood running down his face. Upside down type of thing.
Sure.
But what you're saying about Charlie is, I think, and obviously we'll talk about this in a few weeks, I think what Charlie does is very heroic.
Yes.
Even though he doesn't die. Okay. I agree with what you're saying. I think that, you know, the idea that they wanted to make Simon more complacent here is one of the things that I don't like about this movie. I think that he should have, that it should have been a real bomb, and that they possibly should have had Charlie, you know, disable it at the last moment.
Yeah.
You know, similar to what you have in the first Die Hard. I mean, Hans was willing to kill all the hostages on the roof in order to get his getaway. So, you know, why shouldn't Simon be willing to blow up the school, you know, even if Charlie would have saved the day and stopped it before, in the regular movie fashion, when you have 2 or 1 second left, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a missed opportunity from that perspective, because why do we need to make Simon more likable by having him say, I'm not a monster? Excuse me, you are a monster, as you talked about earlier this week. The people who he killed in the department store believe that he's a monster. there's no getting around that. So
right.
That's what I think from that perspective. But they decided to go a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll have to see later in the script if it's fake or if it's real.
Oh, okay.
We'll have to wait. I mean, we won't, not today. We'll find that out, later in the movie.
Okay.
Even though after this week, the script is almost non-usable, because everything that happens in the script is very different. There's a few little things that are similar, but this is the point where it pretty much diverts to something else. And then the minute changes, and we're back with John and Zeus on the Sawmill Parkway. And I love how they're having this shootout, on the freeway. John is hanging out the window shooting, and we see Eric shooting back at him. Zeus is swerving all over the place. Misha swerving all over the place. Zeus is ducking as the car is as he's driving, and you see the bullets hit the upholstery above where his head is. I mean, great effects, to make it look nice and real here. John is also crouching down the whole time with all the glass breaking and stuff like that. And then John even shoots from inside of the car backwards. Mm-hmm. And then we get some dialogue between them. We have Zeus says, and then John says, get your head down. Come on, Zeus, hold it steady. Hold it steady. Because, he's still swerving around. But I think if someone's shooting at you, you should be swerving around. Yeah. Then he says, go, go. And then Zeus starts screaming to cars in front of him, out of the way. And then John screams, go around him, go around him. So it's a nice way to get the two of them to interact here, even though you can also see the headrest has all these bullet shots in it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the cars are just swerving. Both are swerving them, with everything happening here.
Yeah, car chases aren't something we've really had in this franchise. I mean, I know there was a snowmobile chase in the second one, and
that's right.
In this one, there was obviously stuff with him driving a cab, but that wasn't a chase. So it is it's a good action scene. It's a good car chase. It's certainly more intense because they are doing this shootout in a pretty congested little section of a freeway, and there's obviously cars getting in the way, and just innocent civilians getting in the path of this thing. I love the one where I think Zeus and John, or Zeus drives next to this red car, and the red car swerves to take a shot at Zeus and John and the Mercedes. It's like, because to that driver, you got this car and this truck, and maybe it's just to them, maybe they haven't noticed the gunplay yet, and they think it's just, it's just two aggressive drivers who are, messing around with each other, and I'm sick of it, so I'm just going to take a little, turn my car into the Mercedes just enough to let them know I'm pissed off.
Yeah, but then what does John do at that point? John starts shooting outside the window, and if you look at the trajectory, it looks like he's shooting at the guy in the red car instead of shooting at the truck. And then the red car basically cuts off the truck, and the truck hits against the wall, and there's all these sparks flying and stuff like that. So it's John's causing a lot of destruction to these cars along the way also.
Yeah.
And as the two of them are, I mean, the truck then gets out, and as the truck gets away from this red car, he hits another car, which spins around and hits that red car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that guy got screwed.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. He shouldn't have messed with McClane.
Right.
And then John like hangs out the window and shoots back again. And then he starts shooting inside the car also. Like, I don't know why he's doing this, you know, shooting from inside the car like this, because he doesn't seem to be hitting anything.
Mm.
And as it's happening, John starts another conversation with Zeus, and he goes, "I found out who's the 21st president." "Who?"
"Yeah,
some guy named Arthur." "Chester A. Arthur?" "Chester A. Arthur, that's it, yeah." And then we see the look on Zeus's face.
Yeah.
You know, he's quite shocked and upset at the same time. So, you know, we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out exactly what happens with that. Okay, did you have anything else you want to talk about in this minute?
Just a minor little thing. I think you mentioned earlier about the supporting characters, you know, Charlie being one of them who's really great. But I also really like the guy who plays Cobb throughout this. He's not the most like he's not like he's trying to be stern with McClane. And obviously, like he's probably not the right type of person to deal with a McClane. But then I also really, and I know this guy, was it Larry Brigman?
Larry Brigman.
I grew up, you know, seeing him on, As the World Turns. So wow. I only knew this guy as a soap opera actor. And I think I was young enough to like, it's the first time I'd ever seen a soap opera actor in a movie. And so that was kind of seemed weird to me. And then the other, you know, guy in this minute is Graham Greene. I'm sure you guys have talked about, who I would have only seen in Dances with Wolves and maybe a few other roles where he was only playing, you know, an Indian, you know, and like, I think this might've been the first movie where I had seen an Indian actor just playing a regular person, like not playing, you know, like that wasn't the defining aspect of the character. Right. And like, yeah, I think it was, might have been one of the first instances I can remember of something like that. And just kind of like realizing as a kid, like, oh, he doesn't only have to play, you know, in historic Westerns as a, you know, Native American or whatever the case may be. And then I actually went just on the IMDb. I looked into Graham Greene's, you know, his
IMDb, saw that quote.
The quote about, yeah, like, yeah. Do you feel like you ever get typecast? And he's like, I've played, you know, British soldiers. I've played French soldiers. I've played an old Jewish man. I've played, New York cops. So no. So I'd like to, you know, I like that quote. I like that he's,
yes, I really like the quote.
I like Graham Greene. I like anytime I see him in anything. So
yeah, no, he's very solid in this movie also. And I think you're right. I mean, the none of the characters are put into ethnic categories here.
Yeah. It's kind of like Alien that way, where when they cast Alien, they did. They had character names, but they didn't have, you know, breakdowns of like.
They didn't even have gender.
Right, exactly. So it's like this movie feels like you could do that with all the supporting cast. Like anybody could have been played by anybody. It doesn't really, you know, the characters aren't defined by what they look like or, you know, any of that. So.
Right. I think Ripley was supposed to be a man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't everything be very different if that was the case?
For sure.
Yeah, they did a nice job of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very cool. So do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before I get into the script?
No, I'm good.
All right. So the script talks a little bit about what's going on in the school. So it says Taft Grade School, basement, kitchen. Cobb, Charlie Weiss, and Joe Lambert are staring nervously inside the school's a huge walk-in refrigerator. 2,800 pounds of plastic explosives in a crate marked grade AAA milk sits amidst other food products. The bomb's detonation system, a digital timer, is ticking down. 1523, 1522, 1521. Next to the timer is a small computer keyboard and screen. The screen reads disarming code. And then it has five dashes, just like in the movie, you know, which I like that they kept that detail, you know, that it's a five-digit PIN code. Mm-hmm. The principal says it was delivered this morning. Can you do anything, Charlie, in 10 minutes? Too sophisticated. I could try, but there's a 50% chance I detonate it. Arthur, there is another solution. What? Evacuation. Simon says if he sees one kid leaving, he'll blow it manually. How do we know he's still watching? How do you know he's not? They stare at each other. Cobb sighs. Prepare an evacuation. If McLean doesn't call within the code in 10 minutes, we evacuate the school. Everyone stares grimly at the bomb. So, you know, they do that very interestingly. Yeah. The BMW slides into traffic in a 180-degree turn, narrowly missing oncoming cars, and comes after the Mercedes. Targo in the back seat leans out the window, blasting away. The back windshield blows out. McLean leans out the window, returning fire. A bullet clips McLean's shoulder. McLean recoils inside the car, bleeding from the wound. Zeus looks at McLean, scared. McLean says, "We cannot run them. Get in there." Zeus throws the wheel. The Mercedes flies off the parkway into a McDonald's drive-thru. The Mercedes blasts across the parking lot and enters the drive-thru lane, disappearing around the corner. The BMW, hot on its trail, enters the drive-thru lane and also disappears. In the drive-thru lane, the BMW pulls around the corner and pulls out behind the Mercedes, parked by the food order window. Targo, Mr. Luck, and the other man snap new clips into their weapons and unload a vicious extended fuselage into the back of the Mercedes, riddling it, blowing out every piece of glass. They stop firing. A voice emanates above McLean from above. "Hey, fellas." Targo, Mr. Luck, and the other man turn, their eyes widening as McLean, inside the food order window, leaning out, his gun leveled at Mr. Luck. "Want some lead with your coffee?" McLean's gun erupts. He shoots Mr. Luck and the other man, killing them instantly. Targo comes up firing, blowing out the glass of the food order window as McLean dives to the floor. In the background, the McDonald's employees scream in terror, hugging the floor. Targo climbs behind the window of the BMW, hops the curb, and roars off as McLean jumps through the food order window into the drive-thru lane, emptying his gun into the fleeing BMW. McLean goes to the Mercedes and opens the door. Zeus is on the floor of the passenger side, cringing. McLean gets behind the wheel, floors it. The two vehicles roar into northbound lanes of the parkway. By now, McLean is chasing Targo. "I'm going to kill you, son of a..." "By the way, the 27th president, it's Taft." Zeus says, "What?" He says, "The bomb's in Taft grade school. You know it?" "Yeah, I know it." And then he says, "It's my son's school, McLean." McLean and Zeus stare at each other. So it's a little bit of a discrepancy in the script, because there are times where it calls the two kids his nephew, and there are sure. other times when it calls it his son. So somewhere, you know, they get Raymond and Dexter a little confused right. in the script. I think it's just it was an accident. I believe that they're meant to be his nephews, you know, and that's it. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is related to either revenge or sibling rivalry. So, Travis, you got a story for us?
Yeah, sort of. I've got, I was always told about an instance where my parents came in the room and saw my sister, who was 4 years older than me, standing on my back as if I was like a step stool. Oh, wow. I'm not sure what age I would have been, but like I said, it's 4 year age difference. So I think I was a toddler. So, you know, she was probably maybe six. I don't know. But I know she got into some big trouble with that one. And then, you know, we had a pretty typical brother sister relationship, you know, would get into little scraps, you know, here or there. She kind of picked on me a little bit, until I started to, you know, grow up, and I got to the point where I was suddenly, you know, bigger than she was, and the picking on me sort of stopped. So
I can't understand why.
Yeah.
You should ask her if she remembers why she used you as a step stool.
I think it was literally like, I need to get something, so I'm gonna use you as as a step. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get to the cookie jar or whatever.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Great. That is a great story. Thank you very much for that. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find Travis Bowe?
I'm sure you can find me on my podcast, Real Comic Heroes, where I talk about comic book movies. And you can search that, just Real with two E's. You know, it's on all your podcasters of choice. Check it out.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So Travis, you feel like coming back tomorrow to find out what happens to John and Zeus, and what happens in the school.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right, so until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.